Thank you for this invitation. It's a pleasure for me to present some results of studies about climate change from semiolinguistic point of view. So I will not present only one study, but some focuses on questions that we examined. So some words about semiotics, because I met a lot of people who don't know what it is, so only in a few words. This approach is used especially upon reception of messages, and we try to unravel the representations, previous messages, and the social, cultural, or personal messages to be found within the documents that we analyze. So it can be text, images, advertisements, and so on and so on, movies. Analyzing the differences between the manifest content and the latent content is one of the semiotician's most important tasks. And I think that it is very interesting to analyze the differences between these two levels in order to find the links between explicit forms and other effects, implicit effects or content. Semiotician tries to discover how the meaning is built, what effects of meaning can be found in the implicit content, in the latent significances, or in the cultural unknowns. It's the famous l'essence culturelle. And it is essential to do an in-depth analysis of the convergences in order to highlight the recurring elements in a given corpus, paying a special attention to scenic, textual, and semantic devices and to their reference and values. It's also very important to analyze the role of the reader and the text within the interpretation process. During the analysis, the semiotician or semiolinguist, if you want, does not just read the documents, he frames and organizes the traits of the images and words. Every visual perception, even when examined in an inattentive or indifferent manner, is interpreted in relation to other previous visual perceptions. So this intertextuality or intereconicity falls within the domain of both subjectivity and of a cultural community. Analysis of the different strata is a vital stage of throwing light upon the universes of values relating to a given corpus. I will not talk about a linguistic methodology. It was done, but of course, it is another very important aspect. We talk about climate change here, and is it a normal expression? It can be considered as a paradoxical expression. In fact, lexical analysis highlights a semantic selection for each of the units forming the expression climate change, which now appears as a paradoxical expression. I'm talking about the French language. I think that in English it would be the same. But everything that I show today concerns the French media or the French language and the period before the climate gate. So a paradoxical expression. The change is in fact conceived as a priority like instability, rupture, upheaval, and even revolution, while the climate, once joined to change, ceases to have any connections with its traditional semantic components, localization, invariance, correlation between space and conditions. Thus, the change in question cannot be understood as change of climate, but rather global upheaval, contravening the normal state of things. The Earth is now considered as a single region with a single climate, which is characterized as warmer, Hence, the emergence of the expression global warming, used as an quasi-exact equivalent to that of climate change in France. I know that in other countries, in English-speaking countries, it's not exactly the case. It's also very interesting to observe that this marginal appearance of the expression climate changes in plural, it's not too often. And this indicates that the change is predominantly understood on the mode of uniqueness, which undoubtedly marks further its global nature, even it says nothing about the possible diversity of its manifestations from one continent to the next. A clear establishment of technical terms can be seen insofar in media discourses, for example, recent media discourses, as terms such as CO2 and carbon dioxide, which 10 years ago, in another corpus 10 years ago, were related to a specialist vocabulary. And now these expressions have become part of common discourse. Indeed, CO2 has even become the star term of greenhouse gas vocabulary. We have some examples for that. Another example, we can also note the success of eco-language or eco-langage. The prevalence of this prefix, eco, reveals that the discourse on climate change tends to combine climate change with ecological concerns. However, it is more than likely manufactured since it is the economic theme that prevails and not the ecological one. The use of the prefix eco, which in French applies to both economy and ecology, therefore leads to a surface ambiguity, which in terms of content is quickly clarified. It is more about economy in media discourse than ecology. Another example, climate change, the famous energy transition, everybody is talking about that nowadays, and the semantics of sobriety. The idea of moderation of energy consumption can be found in the media discourse about climate change and energy saving, where we find a vocabulary of dependence and addiction versus a vocabulary of sobriety. The metaphor implicitly positions our dependence on energy and its overconsumption as a pathological relationship that must eventually be severed. The pathological component of the semantics of sobriety evokes the idea of a disease of which climate change is only the symptom. Beyond this medical aspect, it is worth noting that if the semantic content of sobriety is likened to alcoholism, it is also resembles notions of austerity, moderation, and restraint, where moral and moralizing attitude also takes shape with regard to excess and intemperance. This moralization also infers that whoever consumes too much CO2 is effectively committing an offense. More likely, this metaphor, which belongs to the register of individual conduct, implicitly aims to attribute greater climate change responsibility to citizens and to end users than to government institutions, authorities. You talked about narrative. And I think that it is particularly important to consider climate change and the discourse that we hear about climate change as storytelling. As somebody is telling a story, but not the same story in every context. So one example, this is an example of the scientific vulgarization, French scientific vulgarization in 2008. Two magazines were analyzed. So in these magazines, we can see perfectly that climate change does not escape the fashion for storytelling. It does resemble a story with its plot, suspense, and sometimes acting as classic theater. This phenomenon constitutes, paradoxically, both a trivialization of the event, which is narrativized like other affairs relayed in the media, and a specific dramatization in which the quest for solutions becomes the main stage of the story. The survival of mankind may depend on it. The photographic iconography is mythical and dramatizing. It favors production, in this case mainly shots of scenery, evoking fictional and imaginary atmospheres with blurred and shadowy areas, which disturb partly or wholly the recognition of the referent photograph. In addition, these mythical photographs tend toward dramatization, since the mystery formed by the ambience is often rather somber and varying. Unnatural colors, disturbance of traditional one-third, two-third proportions, and so on. There is also a very unromantic exaltation of nature, which may be used as intertext with Turner paintings, or even for some photographs of factory and with literary intertext with Zola type feel. Photographs which show humans can also be identified in the corpus. These mainly involve the victims of climate change refugees in particular. Heat waves, which could be the logical prototype of global warming, are less often represented than other extreme events, such as floods, which are the most common in the corpus. Less often, we see scientists at work. When the topic of extreme events is dealt with, we see exactly the same production were used. If it were not for commentaries and captions, we would not be able to tell the differences between scenery illustrating climate change in general and the scenery illustrating extreme events, which therefore indicates a high degree of photographic assimilation of climate change to an extreme event, which is likely to have negative connotations. A lexical specificity of the 2008 corpus is the metaphor of the challenge. So we are before ClimateGate, of course. This implicitly proposes a scenario of the test, which the world must take and which it must pass. It is known that the narrative function of the test, particularly in stories, is to involve the hero in a quest which will give him personal insight. The need to surpass himself and to reach a favorable, even glorious outcome proposed by the topicalization of the challenge can be interpreted as a positive value of climate change, inviting the whole humankind to join forces in a common battle from which it will emerge triumphant. This interpretation can be extended to an opposition of the challenge and the threat, an opposition which gives the semantic value of challenge. Challenge can even be considered as a great opportunity for Europe, for example, to distance itself from an ideology essentially centered on immediate profit, where it can be seen that the environmental topics are correlated with a broader geopolitical perspective, integrating the political component. Thus, the test set by climate change would enable the world hero, or at least the hero of Europe, to discover never seen before potential, a more humanist identity. There are other texts that I didn't translate into English. So if you want, I can try to say something about that. It's the science fiction. So, but I wrote a little book about that in French. So if you are interested, it is more interesting to read it that than to hear me in English approximately talk about that. I don't know if the corpus is here. No, but some examples of corpuses of this of the literature. I have approximately 50 or 60 elements of corpus about science fiction novels, but also movies, and but not documentaries, only fictions. So I analyze them and I categorize them, but it would be too long. It's another presentation to present it. One of the issues of this study is that humankind is always responsible. Always responsible, and even in the 16th centuries, that humankind was considered himself that responsible for all the problems that he meets, and this conception of the guilt of this feeling of guilty doesn't disappear at all, and there is always a problem that is caused by humans. Even God punishment was provoked by human attitudes. So, well, some examples. And I wanted to show you some images that I use to show the possible consequences of climate change. All these images were created based on IPCC reports, all these images. So it's a big town in Central Europe, and the consequences. So Paris, we heard that Paris is a protected region, but in a very long time, so I don't know when, it could be a place that is not so protected. That it's also, we are in Paris and La Défense. So it's Italy, you recognize. And the United States. Italy also. Well, this slide it's also too long to present it, but I wanted just to say in what measure the period before ClimateGate was quite simple to analyze, the skepticism was not present or in a very little measure, if we compare what happened after, so in at the end of 2009 and after, it was something that we could analyze quite simply, how discourses changed during these 4 or 5 years. It was very interesting how these expressions, these technical terms. Are now and in 2008 and 2009 really integrated into the media discourses, and a real change operated in 2009. And after that, it's the period of the doubt everywhere. And so I don't show these analyses. But after that, it is not the same. Semantic fields that we find, not only the same semantic fields. It was something very important happened in 2009 about these questions. So, and now it's to be followed.